Smestions.
Hello and welcome to Take Three. Welcome to the Vanguard. Welcome again to Robbie Collin.
Hello. Thank you. Hello.
I'm Rhianna Dillon. If you haven't listened to Take Two or One yet, we're standing in for Mark and Simon. And today's Take Three, we're going to be discussing your predictions for 2024. That's you, the listener, and also you, Robbie. We're going to be talking about yours.
Yes.
What the best and the biggest films of this year are going to be. So I want to kick off with some listener correspondence. Josh, I mean, there was absolutely no way this film wasn't going to crop up immediately. Josh says, Dune Part 2 is surely going to be both the biggest and the best. I also have high hopes for Luca Guadagnino's Challengers and Robert Eggers's Nosferatu. I'm really excited by both of those.
Yes. Two of those are on my list. And the third would have also been on the list if I wasn't certain it was going to be named in every listener contribution.
I see what you mean. Yes. Yeah. You have deliberately not put Dune Part 2 in yours.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Robert Eggers. So have you loved all of his movies?
I have, yes. And he always works with the same cinematographer, mm-hmm. Yaron Blaschke, and he has this... not quite a repertory company yet, but recurring faces that do pop up here and there. Willem Dafoe being one of them. Ralph Ineson being another, who was in The Witch. Nosferatu has both of them in it, which I'm very excited about. But it stars Bill Skarsgård and Lily Rose Depp and Nicholas Hoult as, I think Bill Skarsgård is Count Orlok, the vampire. Lily Rose Depp is presumably the fair maiden, mm-hmm. What he is menacing, and Nicholas Hoult as her earthly lover. I'm guessing. The thing is, nobody really knows anything about Nosferatu at this point, apart from that it is a remake of Nosferatu.
What was the Dracula film that Nicholas Hoult was in recently with Nicholas
Cage?
Oh, goodness,
yes. What was that called again? Renfield?
Yeah, Renfield, where he sort of plays exactly kind of the personality of what I think he plays in this, but I don't know if it's true or not, but that's the sort of image that I have of him.
Yes. I imagine this will be totally very, very different to Renfield.
Yes.
I think it's the one thing Yaron Blaschke said about the way it was being shot. It's being shot in colour, so not like lighthouse. And with this very kind of 19th century capital R romantic aesthetic.
Mm.
Very in for Robert Eggers doing that. He's a director who is so good at faces, and Lily Rose Depp I've only seen in The Idol.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good show.
Mm-mm.
But I have total faith. She has a very striking look. And
she
does. I've complete faith that Robert Eggers will be able to draw out her talents and use them very well. And as I say, seeing him work with Willem Dafoe again, Ralph Ineson again, Simon McBurney's in it. I can't think of anyone I would rather see in a Nosferatu film than Simon McBurney. Very exciting. That's not out till, I think, next Christmas.
Yes, it's a long wait.
End of 2024, this is. But yes, that's number one on my list. I mean, not in a ranked list, but
yes,
that's also my
list. High up. Luca Guadagnino's challenge. I love Luca Guadagnino so much.
Yeah, so this is also on my list.
This is going to be hot, right?
Yeah, so like it's a sexually fluid love triangle set in the world of professional tennis.
With Zendaya,
Josh O'Connor, Mike Feiss. I don't know what else you have to say. That's already, in line for a ticket. It was meant to be out in September last year, but it was hugely delayed because of the actors' strike.
Yes.
Because
they wanted to promote it for...
If you have Zendaya in your film, I get it. You know, you need her to be out doing the red carpets and to bring in the Zendaya fan base. So there's no kind of mistake about it being a film in which she is in. That gap means that Guadagnino's already made another film in the interim with Daniel Craig, which also sounds very exciting, but I imagine that's not going to be out next year.
Sparked a lot of memes, right? Is that one?
It may have done. I'm off Twitter. I don't know.
Oh, okay, fine.
He said smugly. My account expired on Christmas Day. Ugh. Little present to myself. yes, so very, very, very excited about that one. That's also in my top 10, in fact. So maybe, we're going to get... I didn't bother leaving Dune Part 2 off.
Yeah, that's true, actually. They're
just
all
the same bit.
Connor Robinson, I can't believe you've missed this one off your top 10. Deadpool 3 and Argyle.
I mean,
by Matthew Vaughn.
Argyle, I'm kind of intrigued by. Mm. I do like...
The trailer looked did look fun.
It did look very fun. I'm still not entirely clear what the film is about.
No.
There's a cat involved. I think Henry Cavill is playing a fictional character who escapes into the real world, I think. Dua Lipa's in it.
Also,
that's kind of interesting.
Sam Rockwell, I would follow to the ends of the earth in terms of his acting. I just love Sam Rockwell's performances. So that I find really exciting.
So the last Matthew Vaughn film, The Kingsman prequel?
I gave up with Kingsman.
It was not good, but all of the interesting stuff. I mean, to me, that film felt like him. He'd brought like an original swashbuckly spy war film to a studio and said, please, can I make this? Mm. And they said, no, you have to make it into a Kingsman film, because the Kingsman stuff in it is so completely arbitrary. Mm. And I kind of wish I'd seen, whether this is the case or not, I've got no idea, but I wish the non-Kingsman version of that film had just been allowed to exist. Yeah. And the fact that this is a standalone thing, it is intriguing. Deadpool 3, keep it. Not bothered. The whole superhero thing, this is one of the really interesting things about cinema next year, is that superheroes, because of the actors and writers strike, are basically on a one-year hiatus. There's very few superhero films coming out. I think there's
two are directed by women. Venom 3.
Yeah, that's right. So we've got coming out. And Madame Web as well. So there's the three Spider-Man villain spin-offs. There's also Kraven the Hunter as well, which was postponed because of the actors strike. And there's Deadpool 3. I think those are the only sort of mainline franchise superhero films coming out, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
So the fact that those aren't going to be around is exciting in and of itself.
Yeah, I can tell you are absolutely thrilled by that. But yes, Deadpool 3, I mean, it always delivers.
It delivers something. And
certainly for Connor, it does. Darren Fuens says, I predict that Joaquin Phoenix will star in a Norman Wisdom biopic. You'd see that, wouldn't you?
Of course.
Kenneth Branagh will star in a new take on Miss Marple. I don't think you'd see that.
With Branagh as Marple.
Starring as, yeah, exactly. Ken Loach will direct a remake of Silent Running starring Danny Dyer's Dewey. And Warners are going to release the complete uncut The Devils.
Now that's when he took it too far.
Good predictions. Deb says, I predict The Salt Path will be wonderful. What's The Salt Path?
It's a literary adaptation with Jason Isaacs and Julian Anderson, I think.
I think
this is presumably off the back of a book. Yes. Yeah, there you go, a useful book.
Yeah, sorry.
Oops, I'm sorry.
Sorry, that was my bad. Deb says, I predict The Salt Path will be wonderful. A beautiful book, and the film looks like being equally moving and uplifting. Plus, it stars some guy called Jason Isaacs. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you, Deb. Beppa says challenges as well.
Love the love for challenges.
I know, nice. Me too. Okay. So Beppa has said challenges. I'm interested on how it goes due to a slight return interest in tennis. So yeah, I wonder, I kind of love that Beppa is going to come to this because of the tennis aspect.
That's like the man that reads Playboy for the articles. I went to see challenges for the tennis.
I love that. It's adorable. But Beppa also wanted to see the new Looney Tunes, which got axed. So...
sad.
That is incredibly sad. We're all gutted by that. Dan the chauffeur says, I predict that I'm going to have extreme difficulty trying to get tickets to see June 2 at the BFI IMAX, but that I will prevail, I will succeed, and I will enjoy very much. I have every faith, Dan.
Yes, I could not be more excited for June Part 2. I mean, I should have included that on my list, obviously. Beyond June Part 2, people have mentioned Challengers and Nosferatu. Okay,
yeah.
So we've got eight of mine left. So the first one, which is out in February, is The Zone of Interest, the new Jonathan Glazer film, his first since Under the Skin. Have you seen this?
Yes, I have.
I mean, it's just like nothing else. Again, this is Jonathan Glazer. I don't quite understand how he does it, but his understanding of cinema is such that every time he sits down to make a film, which does not happen often, he is able to present you with something that you just simply have not seen before. And not in terms of visual effects advances or in terms of flashy cinematography, in terms of how you walk out of the building after having seen the thing. Under the Skin, I remember leaving, every time I've seen that film, I've afterwards, you're walking down the street and you're relating to people as the alien character relates to people in the film.
Yeah, periphery is like full of black goo.
The world just looks completely different as a result of seeing that film. And it does in very different ways, but extremely, I would say, probably even more powerful ways after The Zone of Interest. So this is a very loose adaptation of the Martin Amis novel about the lives of the staff at the Auschwitz concentration camp during the Second World War. What he's done is he's got rid of all of the narrative from the Amis book, and instead he's using real historical figures. So Rudolf and Hedwig Hoss, who were the couple, or... Rudolf Hoss was in charge of the camp. Hedwig was his wife. They're played by Christian Friedel and Sandra Hüller. And
he's having quite the year.
She is, yes, my goodness. And after Anatomy of a Fall as well. And the film observes them as they go about raising their family and him working hard to make this camp as efficient as possible. And by efficient, I mean capable of murdering the most people in the quickest amount of time. The style of the thing is it's coolly observational. Very present tense is the visual language of surveillance, you know, cameras, stationary cameras in each room just watching what's happening. Mm-hmm. The actual atrocities at the camp are overheard but they're never directly depicted.
Who would have thought, really, that would be so powerful as it is?
But this is
when we've seen so many films with the horrific visuals.
No, I know. And I think this is one of the great moral arguments around cinema, is when you are depicting something like the Holocaust, what are the moral concerns there? You know, if you're kind of recreating that stuff, does the act of recreation not sort of cheapen it, mm-hmm. and exploit it? Mm-hmm. There's no sort of way to do that ethically. And what Glazer has done is he's found a way to do it ethically, mm. which is not to do it, and yeah. to have it kind of happening in our oral periphery, certainly, because the sounds, the machinery of murder, mm. you hear churning away constantly. And I think one of the highest compliments I can pay the film is it just doesn't feel like a Holocaust film when you're watching it. The incredible thing it does is when you watch a Holocaust film, the feeling that you're always left with is, oh my God, look at what they did.
Mm.
And the feeling that I had certainly coming out of this film is, oh my God, look at what we do, mm. right? It's present tense and it's implicative. Yeah. It's you are kind of, you in an awful way, you recognize that normal human beings are capable of mm-hmm. what's going on here. I mean, if we get to the end of 2024 and I've seen a better film than this, I will be astonished. I think this is nailed on in the same way that Under the Skin was nailed on 11 years ago. Mm. But we'll see.
What about Robot Dreams?
Yeah, so this is a new animated film, very, very, very different from Zone of Interest. Zone of Interest is out in February. This is out in March, an animated film from the Spanish director Blanca Nieves, Pablo Berger, about a dog and a robot who live in 1980s New York and are best friends. It's dialogue-free, so it works for all ages, but it's very profound on the nature and the purpose of friendship, as well as being beautiful and funny and mm. and incredibly watchable for children, I would say, probably as young as four, I think.
Really?
Yeah. I found this incredibly moving in the way that the best Pixar is incredibly moving, because mm. it's giving you, it's saying really insightful things about what we get from friendship and what we kind of put into friendship and how that affects us and how it affects other people, but in this very clear-eyed way. It's also very, very funny. It's also a great evocation of 1980s New York, that you really feel as if you're in the city. And it also uses September by Earth, Wind and Fire in the most wonderful way imaginable.
Really? What better than Get Over It?
I mean, better than any. I saw this with my kids. They were doing like a series of preview screenings before Christmas. And so I took the boys to see it. And they had been singing September around the house ever since. So for that reason alone,
it's very cheering.
You know, it's not crap from YouTube. It's not Skibbity Toilet or something. It's a good song.
It's the new Murder on the Dance Floor, is it?
In a way, yes. So, but yes, Robot Dreams, all ages, completely wonderful. Challenges we've done. Next, so this is in June. This is The Bike Riders by Jeff Nichols. Again, this was a film delayed by the strikes. It was supposed to be out in December for Christmas. Mm-hmm. It was a Disney film. And then I think they sold it. I think they've got rid of the distribution rights. Mm-hmm. So it's gone to someone else. And now it's coming out in June next summer. This is a period piece inspired by this volume of photojournalism called The Bike Riders from 1967 about a Midwestern motorcycle club. Tom Hardy stars as the charismatic leader of the group, who overtly models himself on Marlon Brando in mm-hmm. Wild One. Austin Butler is the kind of gorgeous, tortured bad boy.
What's his accent like?
It's good. It's good.
Yeah?
Never mind the accent. The arms. Oh. You need to see these arms. These are.
Is this what has inspired you, all your Instagram photos recently?
Are you bringing this up? Okay.
Just saying, you've got very good arms, Robbie.
Thank you. That's very kind. I mean, look, Austin Butler is the apogee of the arm yeah. world. But no, I'm glad that's kind of you've
seeped into my consciousness.
Butler-esque. Thank you. Jodie Comer's in it as well. She plays the wife who gives us the outsider's perspective on the group.
Does she just play the wife?
No. It sounds like it's kind of, let's move her off to the side. It's yeah. such a great performance.
Okay.
It's such a great character.
Good.
It's made, so it's Jeff Nichols, who did Loving, that we mentioned earlier,
yeah.
and who did Midnight Special. Mm-hmm. And he's made it in the style of mid-period Scorsese. And I think what's really interesting is when you see Scorsese doing his incredible late-period Scorsese stuff, you do sometimes find yourself pining for those mm-hmm. the Goodfellas era. This is absolutely made in that style. It gets the energy spot on. It gets the needle drop spot on. It gets that kind of moral push-pull. We're intrigued. We're delighted. We're attracted, but we're also repulsed. Thing going very, very well. So yes, I hugely enjoyed that. It was at London Film Festival, and it felt like a very long time ago that I saw it. But it's again, it's not out for another 6 months. Mm. But absolutely worth looking out for.
Good. And then we have another Coppola on the list.
Total wild card here. Megalopolis.
Now, Francis Ford mm-hmm. Coppola. Do you think he's made a good movie in the last 40 years?
He's barely made excuse me, he's barely made a movie in the last 40 years. I mean, it's been a while. I mean, I think the interesting thing about Coppola Sr. is he retreated into incredibly small experimental personal work. And some of it has been very intriguing. I thought Youth Without Youth had its qualities, but it's he also was an early booster of Alden Ehrenreich, which I think shows that the guy has real taste.
Mm.
But he's not made, I mean, goodness, what was the last huge Coppola blowout? Was it really Dracula? Do we have to go back that far? Anyway, this was a really long-standing passion project. He's been working on this for literal decades. It's a utopian sci-fi epic about town planning, starring Adam Driver, Forest Whitaker, and our own Natalie Emmanuel.
I love how much Adam Driver loves passion projects by these directors.
I know.
It's like his favourite thing, isn't it?
And goodness, I can't wait to see what Coppola has done with them. There was a point at which this was going to be, I think Jude Law was going to play that role. I think DiCaprio was going to play that role because he's been trying to make it for like 30 years. He actually filmed a lot of footage for this before September 11th with Ron Frick, the cinematographer from Koyaanis Katsi.
You're kidding.
And it was, I mean, it was second unit stuff. So we're talking about cityscapes of New York, you know, I imagine, you know, sunrise, moonrise, people buzzing around at, you know, high speed.
Mm.
All of the sort of scene setting stuff because the film is set in a future version of New York, which is kind of pulling itself together after some catastrophe or attack or something. And it's about, you know, what direction should the city go in? But I think all of that footage has been junked because he felt it was no longer relevant after 9/11. Mm-hmm. The whole project had to be recalibrated around that. What's it going to be like? Absolutely no idea. But what I will say is there's a great book about Coppola's work published at the end of the year by Sam Wasson. And it positions Megalopolis as the kind of at the end of this Dantean quest through, you know, the circles of hell that was making Apocalypse Now up towards, you know, heaven. Megalopolis is the end of this journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to read that book and not be phenomenally excited about what he's going to do.
So before you go on, because there are some bangers still to come, I just want to bring up Rose Glass's Love Lies Bleeding.
Because I should have had this on my list. Why have I forgotten this?
because to be honest, 2024 is not looking great for female directors. And there have been a number of studies that have come out from Variety, like in the last few days, about, you know, all of these pledges that all of these film companies did and how performative they really were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so kind of, it's so infuriating to read. And as I was having a quick look through of, okay, who is actually releasing a film in 2024? And Rose Glass's name came up. And mm-hmm. I loved St. Maud so much. What a phenomenal debut. And I'm so excited that she's returning. It's a film about competitive bodybuilding and it stars Kristen Stewart.
Have you seen the poster for this?
Yes.
I mean, talk about good arms.
Oh my goodness. Word. I know. So I'm really thrilled to see this venture in a completely different direction because I think especially, I mean, it's quite rare to have a female director being given a second movie, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But especially one that she has also written again, instead of some people, I don't want to say the word palmed off, but, you know, they might be given something that they actually have no creative control over.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a real thrill to know that Rose Glass is so kind of intrinsic throughout this whole film.
Yeah, and I think it's premiering at Sundance. So we should hear more about it
soon.
Very soon.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, I should have had that on my list. What a dafty.
It's okay, it's on mine.
Yeah, it's a good one.
All right, let's go back to your list. This one I've not seen.
Another British director.
Yeah.
Blitz by Steve McQueen. So Harris Dickinson came in when I was on holiday cover.
Yes, I remember.
To talk about Scrapper. Because of the actor strike, he wasn't allowed to talk about this film, which was very exasperating because I'm so excited about it. This is Steve McQueen's new project about London during the Blitz. Harris Dickinson's in it, Saoirse Ronan, Stephen Graham, Kathy Burke, Hayley Squires, Paul Weller, if you please.
What?
Interesting cast. All we know about it currently is the historical setting and who's on screen.
Mm-hmm.
But having seen what McQueen did with Small Axe in terms of like evoking a certain point in British history and using personal stories to say big things, I just could not be more excited for this. It sort of feels like a Cannes film, if I was going to have to guess now. So I would imagine it will appear late summer, maybe around the time that, what was Widows? That was like early September, I think. So I sort of sense a splashy...
I saw Widows at LFF. That opened LFF, didn't it?
Did it? Goodness, okay, so I'm misremembering. Right, okay. I sort of sense, because McQueen's last film premiered at Cannes. That was Occupied City, which is still to come out in the UK. It's this incredibly weighty documentary about Amsterdam and the Holocaust of 4 hours. I mean, a real serious piece of work and very, very, very good. But I sense that having done the tricky film at last year's festival, they may want to give him the huge film this year's. So I'm sort of imagining it will appear in May time and then at some point during the summer in the UK, which is very exciting. Another even bigger summer film is Horizon, which is the new film from Kevin Costner.
Behind the camera instead of in front of it, or is he doing both?
He's doing both, of course.
Of course.
This is his first film as director since Open Range back in 2003, can you believe? And he's obviously been busy with Yellowstone, and that I think really helped to re-cement his reputation. Not that there was anything ever wrong with his reputation, but you know, as someone who has this particular sprawling vision for this point in history. Horizon is 4 hours long, and it's going to be released in two parts. One in June and then the second in August.
Oh, that's pretty unusual to have two in 1 year.
It's very unusual. And it's also, I think, a big vote of confidence from the studio.
Yeah.
Because, goodness, they did that with the very entertaining Three Musketeers, the Martin Buber adaptation that just recently came out. I don't think at the box office did especially well. Mm. So the fact that they're doing this with an even smaller gap between them suggests that they think this has maybe got the appeal of Napoleon, which, as we saw earlier, is doing so, so well commercially. Co-written with John Baird, which is very exciting. Great to see a fellow Scot, working with the big guys.
Yeah. Last scene doing Tetris, round Tetris.
Yes, that's right, that's right. Again, it's Civil War. It's, I think, pre-Civil War and post-Civil War, spanning, 15 years or something like that. The scale of the ambition of it is what's exciting about this for me.
So I'm going to drop another one of mine in, which is COPA 71, which is a documentary. Mm-hmm. And it's by Rachel Ramsey and James Erskine, who did Le Mans.
Yes, right, okay.
So, and it's exec produced by the Williams sisters. But
wow,
it's not about tennis, it's about football. And it's about this this tournament that took place in Mexico City. It was unofficial. It was, I think, almost illegal. What's so incredible is that it takes place in the same places as where the World Cup was the year before. So where where Pelé was, where Bobby Moore was, and the female version, the women's final, got 110,000 people. And yet it's this forgotten slice of footballing history. And I guess because of this resurgence of love for women's football in the last year or two, this is why this film is coming out now. And I'm really excited about
it. Does it have a release date yet?
8th of March.
Okay. It's on the calendar. Excellent.
Yeah, so it's in a couple of months. So do look out for that one. Okay. Now, Andrea Arnold.
Yeah, let me give you two more. So these are both feel like autumn films because they sound like awardsy, but also quite tricky. So the sort of thing that turns up at Venice and gets great reviews and then comes out 2 months later and everyone goes, what are you talking about?
Right, okay, cool.
We'll see. Maybe not Andrea Arnold, because Andrea Arnold is, Andrea Arnold.
A legend, as we know, yeah.
So Bird is the new Andrea Arnold film. It's her first narrative feature since American Honey in 2016. Though she also made that documentary Cow in between about the life of the cow on the dairy farm. All I know about this is it stars Barry Keoghan and Franz Rogowski.
Wow, so, both having incredible years.
Yeah, so Barry Keoghan, of course, in Saltburn, and Franz Rogowski, who was in Ira Sachs Passages. The thought of those two working with Andrea Arnold is so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what she's done with them. I think Rogowski mentioned in some interview recently that they'd been waiting hours at the side of a playing field in order for the conditions to be just right for this group of kids to kind of stride across it in the manner in which Andrea Arnold wanted them to stride.
Mm-hmm.
She's that kind of filmmaker, she will kind of lie and wait for a moment and then just, when the conditions are right, she'll capture it and it will be the most perfect thing you've ever seen. That it feels like, yes. So when I say tricky, I mean, there's a certain degree of investment needed in order to enjoy these things. And it feels like this might kind of crop up at Venice possibly. And get a lot of good reviews. So very excited about that. Another one that's an absolute nailed-on film for Venice because all of his films play there is Maria by Pablo Larraín. This is the third entry in his kind of emerging trilogy of films about famous women in crisis.
Yes.
So he did Jackie, he did Spencer. Like Spencer, this is written by Stephen Knight and it stars Angelina Jolie as Maria Callas. Apparently during the final years of her life, when she was living as a recluse in Paris, Again, not a great deal is known about this, other than it was filmed in October, just gone. And Aristotle Onassis, played by Haluk Bilginer, the guy who was in EastEnders and also the Nuri Bilge Ceylan film, Winter Sleep, he plays Aristotle Onassis. So clearly there's some, maybe, you know, the affair between them is an element of it. Also, I mean, I suppose he had an affair with Jackie, so it kind of ties back to that, thereby completing the trilogy very neatly in a way that George Lucas would, I'm sure, appreciate. but yes, we don't know anything about it other than all these previous Pablo Larraín films that are remotely like this have been absolutely incredible. Although,
I don't know.
These are the ones, these
I'm
are the ones
I'm just gagging
that I
remembering
get.
The pearl eating scene in Spencer.
That was great, but these are the ones that I kind of give good reviews to, and then people are like, that was weird.
It was. I mean, you can't deny it was a weird film. It doesn't necessarily follow that it's bad.
But yes, I would guess September, October time.
What a great top 10.
Very excited. Top 11, I want to squeeze Rose Glass in there because I should have had her on there. That's rubbish.
I'm going to also just give a quick mention, only quick because it's coming out in a month, to American Fiction, starring Jeffrey Wright, directed by Cord Jefferson, who is a journalist as well. And you can sort of tell. Have you seen American Fiction?
I've not. No, I can't wait.
Oh, it's just this brilliant, like, biting satire. It's the story of Monk, who's this academic, and this writer whose writing isn't black enough for his publishers, despite him being a black writer. And he kind of writes this satire of blackness as he thinks white people want to read it, which they do, because publishers want it, and suddenly it's the most praised piece he's ever written.
Oh, that sounds brilliant.
And it just feels like it was made for Jeffrey Wright, and it's because predominantly we see Jeffrey Wright in supporting roles. I love that he's been given a chance to really sink his teeth into such a brilliant and also funny role. He just shows he's so versatile anyway, but it just is a pleasure to see him in a feature film where he's the main character.
Yes, my goodness, I loved Jeffrey Wright in Asteroid City when he tells his life story in the course of about 30 seconds to try and inspire these kids. And that's exactly what you're talking about. It's the scene where he shows up, he does a bit, and you just think, I could so easily watch an entire film of nothing but this man.
Yes. And I'm so glad that we do get to essentially do that. There are some brilliant actors alongside him. Sterling K. Brown, Tracy Ellis Ross. I love that Adam Brody has just really decided to lean into his douchebag era because he's so good at it. And Issa Rae as well, who is one of the most charming actors.
Sterling K. Brown, great arms.
Oh,
well,
my goodness. And we see a lot of Sterling as well.
Okay.
You'll be pleased. You'll be very pleased. Oh, gosh. 2024 is looking incredibly exciting. Thank you so much for all of your predictions and your favourite films. Dune Part 2, cannot wait to listen to that episode and to hear your views about it as well. Hopefully just after the screening, I'm going to grab you.
I'm sure it'll be written in 30 seconds. It'll be the worst thing I've ever done.
Robbie, thank you so much for joining us for one, two and three. It's been an absolute pleasure. Hopefully they'll let us back one day.
Fingers crossed.
And thank you everyone for listening, and Simon and Mark will be back next week.
Goodbye. Thanks.